everybody. This is your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter, Dr. Diana Wiley. And returning once again to this program is Brad Coates, calling in all the way from Honolulu, Hawaii. Aloha, Brad.
Aloha, Diana, and aloha to all your listeners. I'm looking forward to having another fun session with you.
Well, me too. And you know, 1999, June, we first met each other. You were written up in, so 20 years of friendship, conversations, and radio shows in Hawaii and here. And, yeah, 20 years, Brian, Bradley. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun and enlightening for, I think, both of us.
Yeah, no question. I learn a lot from you. I've learned a lot from some of your listeners that call in occasionally, and it's been a really wonderful synthesis. You know a lot of stuff that I'm not fully up to speed on, and I hope I can add in a little bit myself.
You add in a lot yourself. And speaking of calling in, I haven't discussed this with the producer, but let's let people call in if they want, if they have questions. Brad is the author of Divorce with Decency, the complete how-to handbook and survivor's guide to the legal, emotional, economic, and social issues. And so if any of you have questions about divorce or some sociological stuff that we're going to talk about on the show. You know, I was looking back, speaking of 20 years ago, I actually put into your file some notes that I had from June of 1999. And,
oh, my God.
Yeah. And so I wrote, Brad's book is full of straightforward insights about the winds of social change. He contends that divorce is not the shameful failure it was once considered, but more an essential aspect of a revamped marriage system. Well, you've expanded that. That's all true, and you've expanded a lot on that over the years, and now in your fifth edition.
Well, it is definitely true. It is definitely true that divorce is a game changer, and a lot of other demographic changes are afoot in American society since when we started this 20 years ago. So, you know, we can talk about some of that stuff today. It's fascinating stuff. I mean, you know, the marriage rate is declining very, very rapidly. More and more people are choosing to live together. Kids are being raised outside of nuclear families, which was once viewed as being the standard. Fewer kids are being raised, period. There's all kinds of alternative, you know, living approaches that have occurred. You know, everything from gay marriage or gay, you know, gay relationships to all kinds of different, you know, non-marital linkages that are happening, and many people are just, you know, just taking a much more independent approach to their lifestyles, and it certainly is causing waves of change to ripple throughout American society. So it's fun to try and keep track of it.
Yes, and I like what you say as you do an overlook on the decline of marriage, that marriages must be held together. Nowadays, you say marriages must be held together by love, not by need. And that's really true. There, and you talk about some of the sociological factors that play into that, the marriage killer factors and causes.
Well, there's lots of marriage killer factors that we weren't thinking about before. But if you roll it back to what marriage used to be. I mean, you know, I mean, this is, you know, probably a lot of your listeners are too young to remember this, but in the, you know, the Leave It to Beaver, you know, Father Knows Best TV series that we grew up on in the 50s, it was, you know, dad going to the office and bringing home the paycheck. Mom was a stay-at-home mom. And in that kind of situation, because mom didn't have a lot of control over the purse strings, she was, she became sort of a slave to the family. She was oftentimes not financially able to take off and do stuff on her own, and then the societal constraints, which were held together by, you know, 1950s social mores, organized religion. There was all kinds of pressures that were put on to behave a certain way. So marriages were held together by need. Now everybody's, you know, finding themselves, and in, you know, and everybody's got their personal therapist and their counselor and their safe space, and they're all reading, you know, Deepak Chopra and traveling the world and doing whatever else, not to mention the fact that women are out earning men half the time, so they don't need the purse string issue. Everybody's on their own independent journey nowadays, and so now the only way you're going to stay with anybody is if you really love them enough to want to stay with them, not because you know society told you to, or because you couldn't afford to leave. So that's a pretty big game changer right there.
Of course it is, and you make a number of points that play into this, women now outnumber men in terms of college graduates, and what are some of the, like, the women are often marrying men who are less educated and have less of an income than men. So that kind of puts the woman, if she's in charge of the family income, she may have more control in, it's switched, she may have more control in the marriage.
Well, she's certainly got control over her own options, and because they're at least earning equal to men in a lot of the case. They may have control of the whole family. A lot of times you see these situations where dad's the stay-at-home mom and the mom's the worker bee. Women are getting more advanced degrees. They're excelling in corporate structures. They really have proved to be major players in the economic areas that have advanced. Meanwhile, the guys who were on the automotive assembly line in Detroit were union members, and that was the stable rock of the family. That's changed, and now you've got, you know, wahines, which is Hawaiian for women, that are, you know, running IT companies, and they're the big boss. So it's definitely a major change, and women are nowadays filing for about 2/3 of all divorces. So, you know, it's not a situation where each gender is equally unhappy about equal amounts of time. Women actually are the ones that are pulling the plug and actually acting on it. Guys may be, you know, unhappy, you know, maybe even equally unhappy, but guys won't act on it the way women do. Women, when they feel like their own personal needs for communication and self-advancement are not being met, they actually act on it, whereas the only time guys will really act to pull out of a marriage, and this is an overgeneralization, but guys will stay in even a bad marriage as long as they're being fed and they get to watch sports on TV and whatever. The only time they'll actually pull out of a marriage is if they meet some new gal that has sort of caught their fancy along the way. That's almost a universal truth, which is doesn't say much on behalf of guys, but it does.
Weak-willed
we all are, but that is the case.
It's a trend, and the listening audience, some of the listening audience, I presume, have heard you before on this program, most recently last July. But people listening to this show should know that your firm in Honolulu, Coates & Fry, you've handled, you and your colleagues there, have handled how many divorces at this point and over the course of how many years?
The firm, I got 10 lawyers in the firm all doing divorce work, and we've, between us all, we've probably done 40,000 divorces, and I personally have done probably 7,000 or 8,000 of them. So, yeah, I'm not just making this stuff up. I see this in my office every day. These are absolutely traceable trends, and it is, it's changed the nature of American families. I mean, when you think about it, you know, you've got situation now where the proportion of married couples in America is now at its lowest recorded level ever. young adults between 25 and 34, they're not getting married. Their percentage share has dropped way, way down. The percentage of never married's gone up from about 34% to 46%. Unmarried women now outnumber married women for the first time in American history. The rise of social media has been a total game changer. I mean, everybody can do whatever they damn well please nowadays and flaunt it and find new friends and playmates and whatever else. So it's been a real interesting time to be a divorce lawyer. I get people coming to me all the time saying, "Hey, I've been to marriage counselors, for 2 years and I got more concise and to the point instruction and edification from you in a 1 hour interview than I've gotten in two years with marriage counselors." Not because I'm all that brilliant. I mean, I did spend a lot of time writing a book and trying to learn as much as I could about it. A lot of it's in my Divorce with Decency book, but yes, it's mainly just that I see more of this stuff than almost anybody else. So you'd have to be an idiot not to catch some of these social trends.
Of course. And I think that it adds so much context to your book to have these social trends, and you keep updating it. And you have to keep updating it because it keeps changing. I mean, there's subtle changes, but there have been a lot of changes in the last 15 years especially. You write that since 2005, there were a number of shifts having to do with relationships. And, I presume it's the Internet having
the internet,
more of
the Internet's been huge.
Huge, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've talked about this before, but it's easy to break down. If your listeners will bear with me for a second. I mean, sociologists have long agreed that the two key factors in mating choice have always been proximity and timing. In the old days, you had to physically meet somebody live and in person at somebody else's wedding or in a bar or wherever. Now, thanks to the Internet, both those pillars are eroding. And, you had to meet somebody and the timing in that person's life had to be right. Nowadays,
exactly,
you can meet anybody anytime you go online, and all of a sudden they make the timing right. So what that does is it makes the pool of the potential mates, much, much bigger, which in turn works in favor of shorter-term revolving relationships instead of longer-term, more seriously committed ones, because now the opportunity cost of giving up on any one potential suitor is much, much lower because there's this exponentially expanding numbers of easily available new prospective mates to choose from. So that change in the digital dating landscape is a huge, huge difference right there. And everybody's felt it. Everybody's felt it. I mean, I don't...
And we talked about this last July on this program, according to a recent survey, 55% of Americans ages 18 to 45 spend more time on their phones than with their significant others. And so this has to do with the Internet and cheating and getting caught. It's just cheating and getting caught is so much easier. I mean,
it almost seems like you can't cheat without getting caught anymore. It's just, your GPS gives you away.
I see that. I do most of my practice is couples counseling, although I see individuals, of course. But, so many have been caught as a result of phone transcripts or emails or... It's just easier to get caught, but then if they get caught, they feel like, oh well, I can meet somebody else through the Internet.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
arguably
the price you pay is not what it used to be either. So yeah, it's definitely a new world, and now everybody wants to just live together instead of getting married. I mean, the age for first marriages has gone way, way up. The number of kids being spawned out of every marriage has dropped way, way down. Mm. The the number of people who prefer cohabitation as opposed to getting in the hassle of getting divorced or coming to see a divorce lawyer or dealing with all that, and the advantages that used to come alongside marriage, you know, have somewhat diminished. I mean, it used to be that, you know, if you wanted medical care, you know, you got it through your spouse. Now you're eligible for it in a lot of jurisdictions and companies, you know, for your partner. Now all these benefits apply to your significant other as well as to your spouse. So you can, you know, you can, like I say, bring new people along. I remember I guess it was the early 80s, I was dating a flight attendant, and you know, because we weren't married, I was not allowed to get advantage of her flight privileges. Now all the airlines allow you to pick your significant other, and they get the benefits whether you're married or not. So a lot of the stuff, that the tools that society used to utilize to try and almost force people to stay married or get married or stay married, those have kind of diminished, because now they're available to everybody. So it's really gotten to be pretty interesting. And you know, there is, you know, I don't want to sound like an old fogey, but there has been a lot of sociological evidence that you know, the nuclear families are the bedrock of a solid society, that you know, the kids raised by single parents, you know, have more problems at school and don't do as well over time as kids. You know, now, you know, there's a lot of single mothers and single dads out there, so I don't want to, you know, irritate anybody in the obvious in the audience who's, you know, doing a great job of trying to raise kids on their own. But there is, you know, there's anecdotal and traceable evidence that in society, you know, marital stability has been one of the bedrocks of keeping a strong society. And we're treading in some pretty interesting new territory now, where you know, you don't got to be married, you don't even got to have, you know, it used to be that, you know, you had to marry somebody of the opposite gender. Now that's out the window. I mean, a lot of this stuff is, you know, all these freedoms are opening up, and, you know, God only knows where they're going to lead. They're definitely leading to lower birth rates. And, you know, who knows where that leads to for a society over time. So there's definitely phenomena afoot that nobody's really figured out yet. It's going to be interesting to watch. Maybe I'll have to write another book.
Or maybe just do it in your sixth edition. I mean, you keep adding, and I think it's admirable, because things keep changing. It seems that they're changing slowly, but in the overall scheme of things, between the women's movement and the internet, we have lots more, as you put it, marriage killers. Just lots more. And it's harder to stay married. And
we can go off on any of these, but I think in the latest outline I did, I published a bottom line list of key marriage killer factors. Number one, the internet. More options for more partners. No need to settle for anyone. For boomers, no need to get remarried. A lot of boomers are getting divorced faster than any component of society, and none of them want to get remarried. They all want to keep their alimony awards from their prior divorce, which you lose if you get remarried, or they want to keep their benefits, or they've all got their own benefits. Number two is sex. In the old days, folks, you know, had to get married in order to have sex. Now, sex is readily available without marriage. I mean, we kind of all know that. Number three is religion. Marriage is essentially a religious institution, but now religion is on the decline. You read these statistics about how fewer and fewer people embrace organized religion in America. The expanded benefits, as I talked about just a second ago, government and corporate benefits were previously available only to married folks. Now they're available to significant others and life partners. Marriage being postponed, delay in first marriage is now average age for first marriages is 29 years old for men and 27 for women. And when you and I were growing up, you got married right out of college at, you know, 24 for guys and 22 for women. So that's a major change. You know, the recession, the cash-strapped millennials can't afford courtship. They can't afford marriage. They're still living in their parents' basement. A lot of them don't have their own homes. I got some interesting stuff on the millennials, if we can talk about that later. And then paternity is the next thing on my list. Having kids out of wedlock used to be a pariah. Now that's totally acceptable. And actually, 40 to 50% of all the live births in the U.S. nowadays are out of wedlock. 40 to 50%. Talked a little bit about the, it's incredible. The she
it's
economy,
incredible.
The rapid rise in education and career and monetary advancement for women, so that makes them far less dependent upon either men or marriages. And that's, again, they got to now marry for love, not need. And living arrangements, cohabitations, you know, and living solo used to be frowned upon. It used to be under 10% of the, you know, people lived together before they got married. Now it's totally acceptable and oftentimes preferable. So, you know, it's hard for the old style institution of marriage to keep up when you got all these other things that are knocking it back. So it's a brave new world.
A brave new world. And do you see that maybe divorce attorneys won't have the business they once had?
Oh yeah, no question.
I mean,
we're going to be like buggy whip manufacturers or elevator operators before long. We're going to put divorce lawyers out to pasture. Well, because society's going to have to, you know, they're going to have to deal with this, you know, this issue more efficiently. And, you know, the internet makes everything pretty efficient. I mean, it's going to be just a matter of time before you put all your assets onto a computer program and the court just divides them up. So, I think lawyers are not going to be exempt from what's happening to the rest of society, where, you know, we get replaced by robots to at least some degree. So it may be about time for me to be put out to pasture. I've been doing this for a long time already.
Well, so maybe the timing's good for you, Brad, and you can go into semi-retirement. I believe it's never a good idea to completely retire, because you need to stay engaged in life and feel necessary. And I'm saying all of that with my gerontologist hat on. So don't retire.
Well, I do live in Hawaii, so maybe I can focus on my surfing and my Mai Tai mixing. I don't know. We'll think of something. But no, I'm not dead yet. But it is. It really has changed for my practice. It really has changed to where it becomes more of a observer of social trends rather than just a meat axe down the middle, you know, cutting everybody's assets in half.
Yes.
It's pretty interesting.
Well, I really liked it I'm going to guess it was about 12 to 15 years ago, you started lecturing on cruise ships to suggest to people how they might salvage, how they might improve their marriages, how they can keep from getting divorced.
There are no question a lot of tricks to the trade as to how you go about trying to improve your marriages, and that, you know, that can be a whole nother, I mean, marriage or any other romantic relationship, and that can be a whole nother discussion that we've got. But I mean, it centers on guys having to figure out, you know, what women want in this day and age with the emerging power of the sisterhood. It's going to be guy, and with women doing most of the divorce filings and being the most easily upset and willing to bow out of relationships, it is going to be up to the guys to figure out what this crazy concept that called communication that women seem to want, but guys are not very good at. That's going to be an essential skill that guys are going to have to learn, and hopefully they can figure it out fairly fast. I've got another thing in my materials where I came across an interesting graph which purports to show a happiness hierarchy of relationship statuses.
Well, that's what I was about to go to. But before we go to that, communication, it is so important. Communication is lubrication, especially when we talk about
sex. I love that, yeah.
Yeah, it's especially when we talk about sexual communication, which so many people have trouble with, and I spend a lot of time discussing on this program. But your pros and cons of marriage and the graph that you came across, talk about that.
Well, it's interesting because they rank the happiest, you know, men and women both, and who's going to be happiest, married versus unmarried, et cetera, et cetera. Turns out the happiest quadrant of society are married men. Married men are happy guys if they're being taken care of, and unfortunately, they got to realize fairly rapidly that just being taken care of by their wives is not the only goal anymore. Then comes single women. Single women are the next happiest. Then single men are the third happiest, and the least happy are married women. Married women are not they're not thrilled with being what they view as being taken advantage of a lot of the time, or you know, just kind of ignored by their spouses. They want guys to be, you know, like I say, much more communicative, much more tactile, much more, you know, they want to continue to be courted, you know, well past the stage where the guy is totally relaxed in his lazy boy lounger and says, you know, come on, Myrtle, we've been married for, you know, 5 years already. Why, you know, what do you expect? I mean, I just want to watch the game and eat my Cheetos. And she's saying, well, you know, I want to talk about this situation that I've got in my, you know, my job or my life or with our family or whatever. And the guy's going, you know, you're blocking the TV, dear. That's not going to play anymore.
It's we've already seen that. But married men, so you've described the married man might be the happiest because, especially if he's got his needs met.
If they're getting it all, they're easily satisfied, and like I say, they don't need to discuss the raging issues of our time, or be all philosophical about life. There, you know, as long as they've got as long as they're getting fed and getting sex and getting, you know, and nobody's complaining, they think they're in a happy marriage. Guys come in and are totally, I mean, this happens all the time in my office. Guys come in, yes, and are totally shocked to find themselves getting divorced. They thought they were, yes, they thought they were in happy marriages. And then the gal had been saying, you know, no, we got to do more. We got to go to counseling. And the guy's going, no, I don't want to go to counseling. You know, women are 10 times as likely to go to marriage counseling as guys are. 10 times. So, Guys don't get it.
I see that in my practice because it's usually the wife who begins the marriage counseling. She calls, makes the appointment, and he's kind of dragged in. And then, so on your list of the graph, the least happy are the married women. A lot of these married women feel trapped because they can't get, we're both of us are generalizing, but they can't get their significant others to communicate.
Trapped, obviously we are overgeneralizing across the board, but trapped is actually a pretty good word. You have women that just they are not even exactly sure, you know, they maybe can't even verbalize it themselves, but there's something stirring inside of them that there ought to just be more to life than, you know, watching their husband get fatter and more sedentary and you know, do fewer dishes and, you know, make a bigger mess and whatever, and it turns out the extrapolation of all this is that women are much more likely to be happy being single than are men. When I get a guy getting divorced in my office, he's back to see me for a prenup for his second or third or fourth marriage, you know, within 3 years. Guys who get divorced on an average get remarried within 3 years. Women oftentimes don't want to get married at all. They're perfectly happy being single. They've had more social bonds structured with their fellow females than guys ever do with their fellow males. Women don't feel any need to rush into a remarriage, if at all. So, and women are better equipped to be standalone humans than guys are. And everything from guys not knowing how to cook or clean or whatever to women having more wide net of social linkages, which becomes really crucial as you get older. And guys, you know, they can't do it. It's I'm nothing without my wife. It's weird. So,
well, and guys are clueless at times. And Rodney Dangerfield, the comedian who's passed on, but I thought he was really funny at times. He said, we sleep in separate rooms. We have dinner apart. We take separate vacations. Oh, we're doing everything we can to keep our marriage together.
Yeah, that's perfect. And that's true. And, you know, and I mean, it's funny when Rodney says it, but it's not funny when guys really kind of think that way. I mean, like I say, they are oftentimes really shocked to find out that their wife's been that unhappy. I mean, unhappy enough to go see a divorce lawyer. I mean, you know, guys are totally blindsided by it a lot of the time. And like I say, you won't see a guy coming into a divorce lawyer's office and saying, you know, I need a divorce because I need more communication in my marriage, and I'm a talkative kind of guy, and I always want to, you know, get it to the bottom of things. And my wife, all she ever does is clam up. You know, you won't hear it come that way. You'll hear it all the time from women, but you won't ever hear guys say that. The only time guys will get divorced is if they think there's a cuter girl that comes along. Guys are very visual. They're very tactile. It's weird. I mean, I've talked about on your show before about how guys are oftentimes the first ones to fall in love and to say they're in love and to say I love you, and you know, a couple months before a woman who's going to say it. You know, women have got a much more serious list of criteria they want to see satisfied before they're going to call it a real relationship. And guys, you know, it doesn't have to be a whole lot more than, you know, she's got big boobs and I'm in love. I mean, you know, that's I hate to denigrate my own gender, but my God, it's almost embarrassing sometimes.
Well, you see it firsthand in your office, and you hear about it from your colleagues, and I see it. I see it also, but I also see men trying, you know.
Yeah. I think a lot of guys are starting to figure it out.
Some of the younger guys are
younger
really
guys
aware.
For sure.
You know, we also have the problem that, and I see this, clinically depressed people and addicts find it difficult to get and stay married. And so, of course, fewer married people are depressed or addicted. And some of this could be more mundane, perhaps, that married people are more likely to behave responsibly about health issues or their health.
Married men certainly live longer than unmarried men. That's been traceable for a long
time. Yes.
You know, you want your wife to keep nagging you to quit smoking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And put you in, you know, and put you in, cook better food, and yeah, whatever, and not drink so much. Yeah, no, it has a ripple effect for sure.
Mm-hmm. And that's why men do tend to live longer. Married women, well, they have the advantage of being a female, but some married women are not in good health if they've been chronically subjected to lack of communication, lack of sex. It's meaningful or satisfying.
I had a client the other day,
and they get angry, and they're not nice to live with. because they're disappointed. They're frustrated and disappointed.
I had a client come in the other day, and she said, "I've got to get a divorce. Staying in this marriage is literally killing me." She says,
literally.
"My health is suffering. My doing, you know. I mean, you know, just what you're saying. I mean, you know, literally, they, because women internalize this stuff, and they again, they have higher expectations, and it's, they just, you know, women live longer than men to begin with, but I don't know about married women necessarily doing better.
Yeah,
like I say, I get more and more women. If I get a divorce, process a divorce for a woman over 50, certainly over 60, you know, there's no desire to get remarried again. You know, young girls, they get divorced in their 20s or 30s, and you know, and they may have another run at it. But women that are getting divorced at 40 or 50 or 60, they're not even remotely interested in getting remarried. It's really, and I always ask them, you know, what do you think you'll do next?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. There's all kinds of sociological ripple effects of all this, and I wanted to, you know, point out a couple of them.
Marriage remains
popular amongst the better off and the better educated.
Yes.
But the working class and the poor are now oftentimes choosing to cohabit.
Mm-hmm.
Just cohabit, have kids out of wedlock, you know, where all that leads. 2/3 of college graduates are married, but only half of those who's educated into after high school. So now you've got a situation where the gap between the haves and the have-nots will continue to grow, because you get, you know, you get a, and they've got dating sites nowadays that allow for this kind of self-selecting behavior. I mean, it used to be that it was not all that, when I first started practicing law, it was not that unusual for a lawyer partner in a firm to fall in love with his paralegal or whatever, and they'd get married. Now, these millennials are going on dating sites where only, you know, they self-segregate based on, there's dating sites that you have to be certified as a millionaire to meet other people. They've got certified, they got ones where the doctors wind up marrying doctors, lawyers wind up marrying lawyers. I mean, they really, Ivy Leaguers marry Ivy Leaguers. I mean, they because you can tell everybody's past history, it's no more of this just sort of visceral, I met somebody, they've got a nice smile, a nice personality, I think I like them, no matter what socioeconomic class they're from. It's actually the ability to self-select who you're going to marry based upon their, you know, socioeconomic status. So that's causing the gap to grow. College participation causes the gap to grow. Non-marital births are causing the gap to grow. So you get a situation where the decline of America's traditional married with children nuclear families is changing everything. And, you know, whether you want to admit it or not, unmarried unions do tend to be less stable and have far fewer economic resources compared to married couples. So that tends to put more children at risk of growing up poor, and this thing turns into a ripple effect. It's like I say, it's not a popular thing to espouse, and you get child psychologists like John Rosamond and some of these guys that are they're the tough love kind of child psychologists, as opposed to the now trendy, you know, helicopter parenting, or, you know, parents deliberately committing fraud to get their kids into school and avoid having them have any stumbling blocks in life. You know, I mean, that's that pay-to-play thing for education is, and that hit both of my schools. I went to USC undergrad and UCLA law school, and both of them got caught up in that pay-to-play scandal. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. You know, you get a situation where you've got, you know, less than half of all American children now living in traditional intact nuclear families. Maybe okay, maybe not so good. Over 40% of America's children don't live with their biological fathers. Meanwhile, every time a new partner rotates in or out of a parent's life, their adolescent kids' problems increase by 12%. So every time mom or dad says, come meet my new boyfriend, my new girlfriend, you'll love them as much as I do, the kids don't love them. They don't, you know, they don't, they wanted the marriage to stay intact. It would, you know, a lot of times I think kids would have rather, everybody says, well, it can't have been good for our marriage to have our kids watching us fighting every night. I think a lot of kids, when they're surveyed later, says, hey, I would have rather they'd fought every night and stayed married rather than having, you know, dad, take off on a second marriage with a new Porsche and dating his secretary and not coming to my soccer games anymore. There's an issue with all this, and you've got more than a million children be affected by a divorce every year nowadays. So there's a gal named Judith Wallerstein, and then I'll end on this one, but you talk on your own show.
Yeah.
She did a follow-up study of the children of divorce, how they felt about their parents' divorce 20 or 30 years later, and she found that only 1 in 10 children in her study experienced any sense of relief upon their parents' divorce. So here we've got this institution where, you know, yeah, it's no problem. Everybody gets divorced. Just learn to live with it. And we don't have any Surgeon's General report as to how the ripple effects of this are going to affect society. And that's, you know, that's what's kind of, you know, that's the big elephant in the room waiting to be, you know, figured out.
I've been following Judith Wallerstein for, well, she started her studies. She got a big grant from the Ford Foundation in the 70s. And so she's passed away, I think, a couple of years ago, but in her 80s. But she was an amazing researcher and sociologist and psychologist, and she studied children of divorce over a 20-year period. And she came up with some really important data. And when I'm working with couples with children who are contemplating divorce, we talk about the Wallerstein studies because she found that children ended up in thirds. The top third were actually became more resilient because they had mom's house and dad's house. But only if the parents communicated well and continued to co-parent and did not make the kids message carriers. They didn't talk in Hawaiian. What is the word for bad? Didn't talk.
Pilikia, or yeah, right.
Yeah.
Bad mouthing one another.
About the other parent, and they didn't put down the other parent, and then also that the kids had, they knew when they were going to be at mom's house or dad's house, and there was a very clear schedule that took the kids into account too, but mostly it had to do with the parents continuing to co-parent and talk to the kids. I did a Children of Divorce, a group at Stanford University about 30 years ago, and the children ranged, I did this with a much older, experienced therapist, but we co-led this Children of Divorce group at Stanford, and we did, we met and we did drawings and art therapy. And so draw your family before you even knew about the divorce. Draw your family now. Draw your family as you see it in 5 years. And all of these children saw their families, or they hoped their parents would get back together. They all had that hope.
Yeah,
the parents
yeah,
would
get
back
together. That's interesting.
So that reflects what you said earlier, Brad. That the kids, by Wallerstein, that the kids did not experience relief. They had a hope that the parents would get back together. Now, if there's a lot of chaos and terrible name-calling and maybe even domestic violence, then I think it might be better for the children to be out of that because it could be dangerous. But it's so important for the parents to be the adults they are and the parents they are and take their children into account in all of this. It's really important.
I had talked about John Rosemond, before, mm-hmm. and he's kind of the cantankerous old fart, as far as the child psychologist. He's pretty hardcore about old style values. But he did an article called Marriage Absent Families Are the Worst Situation for Kids. And he points out that 1 in 3 kids now live in father-absent households. And he says that the infant mortality rate for children born to unwed mothers is nearly twice that of children born to married moms. And he mm-hmm. points out that kids in father-absent homes are more likely to abuse drugs and or alcohol, become obese, and smoke. So, again, I'm not, I don't know that it's that dire, but, the old song of needing both genders to for discipline and organization and appropriate upbringing in families, we've just sort of discarded that and because it frees up the adults, and there's always the assumption that, well, if it's good for us as the adults, we were tired of this marriage, we're out of it, so it must be good for we're a bunch of spoiled, post-war spoiled children, especially the boomers. Boomers are divorcing like crazy nowadays just because, we've always grown up doing exactly what we wanted, drugs, sex, and rock and roll, and now looking at the same spouse for 30 years has gotten old, so I'm going to move on. Boomers are divorcing twice as fast as any other cohort of society right now, and that's the opposite of the way it was supposed to be. It used to be that, longer marriage lasted, the more stable it was supposed to be. So it's really kind of funny trying to figure all this stuff out.
John, you and I have talked about John Gottman before,
yes.
And of course he's one of the nation's leading marriage researchers and educators. And now, on the positive side of things, so the boomers, older married couples tend to behave like his research showed, tend to behave like younger married couples outside the bedroom too. The surprising thing is that the longer people are together, the more sense of kindness returns. This is what his research showed. Our research, I'm quoting him now, our research is starting to reveal that in later life, your relationship becomes very much like it was during courtship. And isn't that encouraging? But couples aren't, they're not concerned. They want immediate gratification. They're not willing to hang in and kind of work through it. But they have this possibility of having a better than ever relationship that's filled with communication and even good sex. It's possible.
Well, they say that the sex can be much better in a longer-term relationship, for sure. Once couples know how to please each other and understand each other's bodies, et cetera, that kind of makes sense.
It does. It does. And a lot of us who are older and happy, sexy marriages, we agree with Mark Twain, who said, to get the full value of joy, you must have somebody to divide it with.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, but people often could benefit, I'm biased, but could benefit from some good counseling and maybe individual counseling to get their heads on straight, and then couples counseling to improve their communication. I can't give couples sensate focus, touch homework. I can't give them that in the beginning if they're so angry with each other that they don't even want to be in a bedroom or wherever making love. So we have to work on putting out some of the anger fires. And, of course, what's underneath anger is often pain and fear. So there are different layers of things, and that makes my work very satisfying and ever changing and challenging. That's why I don't have plans to retire. I hope to God I keep my marbles and that I can do this, because they like me because I'm an older woman with lots of experience, now up to like 38 years.
Well, and you focus, in your work, you focus, more than anybody I know. I mean, I'm no expert on, sex therapist or marital therapist even. I mean, I know most marital therapists in this town, but not many of them focus on sexuality. And what people seem to forget is how important sexuality is to a relationship. And you're one of the few people I know that brings that out. It's never far from guys' minds, but I think sometimes, women occasionally at their peril, if they want to stay married, they forget that sex is still going to be important to their husband, even though it may have moved down a notch as far as their scale and their hierarchy of importance. So you're good at getting both halves of the couples, reoriented that way, and I think that's especially important.
Well, so. It is, because I think our sexuality is pretty core to who we are and how responsive we are to a spouse or to a partner. How responsive, if we can initiate, if we can let go, if we can just enjoy our sexuality, it really helps us with bonding. And, I think that we are in a society where the pair bond is strong, and we are pair bonded creatures. Swans or geese are that way, but we have a few more brain abilities than they do, but there are all gradations of sensuality, sexuality, and the glue that holds couples together consists of many things, laughter, companionship, tenderness, and sex. And I think that some couples get into so much busyness of the marriage, and that's real, or the partnership, but they get so busy, and it can protect them from raw intimacy from having to be too open too much of the time. You know, some couples really have this trouble, that pleasure is terrifying because it breaks down the boundaries between people. To have really deep, intimate pleasure, because embracing passion means living with fear. So it's great, though, to be able to work with couples on their sexuality and give them homework assignments after they're talking to each other more, and then their marriages, their relationships, whether they're married or not, improve a lot when they can have healthy, satisfying sex. So
When you're talking about how, you know, how boomers after lengthy marriages and once the kids are out of the house and they're busy lives with their raising the kids and they're pursuing their careers and all that, maybe they have a chance to go back and re-energize the sexuality. They got the time and leisure and the freedom and the privacy to actually, you know, focus on re-energizing their marriages. That's certainly a good thing. And there are plenty of other trends, unfortunately, that kind of go in the opposite direction, making women a growing gender gap between men and women, and pornography and its insane prevalence, and the explosion of pornography now being so readily available, I think has been a potential problem it advances the focus on sexuality by making it pretty visceral and visual, but it also can really lopside people's ideas of what true sexuality ought to be. So much of porn is a guy thing that often dehumanizes women and increases what I call the sexpectations of men, where they just expect, they start skimping on mood, courtship, foreplay, and they just want to, focus right on the sex act. The guys do because they, like I say, they pull it off of their computer, their phone, or whatever, and they're amped up, or they've taken some Viagra and they're immediately erect. I mean, and then that clouds, what the sexual needs and expectations of women oftentimes are, who take a lot more. Cooing and noodling and foreplay before they get anywhere near as excited about sex as guys are, and so that there are elements that are driving the genders away from each other as far as the physical act of sex, and it's nice to have people like you that are trying hard to bridge that gap, because it is, I think, it's a crucial aspect of a well-rounded relationship.
For sure, and in fact. People see my website. I don't usually talk about it on the show. I probably should a little bit more, but my website is drdianawiley.com. So a lot of people out there will see my website and they'll read it and then they decide they want to contact me. So I got an email today. I haven't had a chance to write back to him, but what he said is that he's only been married a year. And he used to, before his marriage, I don't know his age yet, I'll find out, but he used to have a mild problem with porn, as he put it, and now he has no libido for his wife, and yet he's monogamous and faithful, and, if I do see this guy, I don't know yet if I will or if it'll be a fit, but I'll probably find out that he watched maybe more porn than he even is admitting. And not that porn is always a bad thing, but it does change the expectations for a man often. And, these days about 90% of young men report using pornography with some regularity. And
it's exploded and so, everywhere. I mean, I remember when, you used to get a... not me, but I'd go to the video store and I'd watch guys, getting Betamax or something, to put in a brown paper bag and take home and, watch a little porn. But, my God, now where it's on your phone literally popping up in ads. It's a whole different deal. It's just weird. And it's and I think it you know, again, it tends to drive a more of a wedge between men and women. You know, certainly in all societies, you can see it in. And I'm pretty familiar with Japanese society, and because we're so close to Japan here in Hawaii, and in Japan, you know, the women don't want to marry the Japanese men. They've been resulting in a birth rate that's too low to even replenish their own society. Japanese men don't bother trying to please their wives. They focus instead on the Ginza bar girls or geishas, or now they're Japanese are the leaders in robotic sex dolls. So you know, this can drive a pretty permanent wedge between the genders. We see a lot of young Japanese girls, you know, coming to Hawaii for their college or whatever, you know, just trying to escape, you know, traditional marriages to Japanese men. So it's you know, it's going to be tricky. It's going to be tricky to hold relationships together in a fast paced, you know, modern society where the roles that each gender used to play are you know, just getting, you know, demolished. They're becoming so fluid that they're you know, I mean look at gender fluidity. Speaking of fluid, I mean, you know there's so much animosity sometimes growing between the two traditionally recognized genders that many people now, or not many, but the young people, declining to adopt either gender. You know, they don't fill out forms with a standard male or female. They instead insert terms like transgender, agender, androgynous, bigender. Hawaii, for example, no longer requires any gender selection at all on its driver's licenses. Government agencies have begun to accept that practice. So now we're going to go into a whole new area where people are, you know, not only have we had a hard enough time trying to figure out how the two genders relate to one another, but now we're going to come up with a whole third track where people again follow their dream and don't adopt either gender. So, whew, I'll tell you.
Well,
I'm not judgmental about any of this stuff, but it sure is fun to try and from the yours or my standpoint as counselors and trackers of social trends, it's really become pretty interesting.
Well, for sure, and that we didn't get to this today, but it was in your sort of overall outline about hookups. Oh, we're going to have to talk about that in the future. And
well,
we will.
Give us another excuse to get together. Aloha, everybody.
Aloha, and thank you so much. Mahalo, Bradley. Bye-bye, everybody.
Se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore. Ma i tuoi piedi, tap, tap, tap. Ma i tuoi piedi, tap, tap, tap. Happy feet, da da da, happy feet. Oh, I love it,
love it.
Happy feet, da da da, happy feet, da da da, happy feet. Oh, I love it.